order.
You're listening to the Irish Times Inside Politics podcast.
I'm about to make my way to Áras an Uachtaráin. The general election will then be held on Friday, the 26th of February.
We have to make the right choice. Do we stick with the plan that's working or gamble on an uncertain future?
They want a coronation, not an election. Well, this is a republic and we don't do coronations. The Irish people will decide.
I think that the electorate should send the three amigos to ride off into the sunset. Let them get on their donkeys and ride off.
It was the election that nobody won. The hung doll was soon dubbed New Politics. And 70 days later, after torturous negotiations, it would finally produce a government. But it was an unprecedented construct, made up of two parts inside government, Fine Gael and the Independents, and one, Fianna Fáil, half in and half out, as Micheál Martin agreed to support the minority coalition under a confidence and supply agreement. A year after the dawn of this new politics, the Irish Times will seek over the course of the next week to examine how the new arrangements, this new political dispensation, has progressed. Is new politics working? And if so, for whom? To discuss all this in advance of our series, I'm joined by Michael O'Regan, our parliamentary correspondent, and by Katie Hannan, political correspondent for RTE's Primetime. Michael, you were a critic of this new politics right from the get-go. Have you seen anything in the last 12 months that would change your mind?
Nothing, Pat. In fact, if anything, I've hardened my attitude to it. There's been no road to Damascus. There have been a few roads to Kildare Street and chaos and all that kind of thing, but that's about it. It's fundamentally flawed in the sense that the political system in Ireland is adversarial. It's impossible, really, to reach consensus. It was born out of political opportunism, Fine Gael's desire to get into government, Fianna Fáil, wary of government, but, anxious to appear to play their part. So now we have a situation where nothing is really happening. The only real initiative has been in the housing area, which had to be done because we've a humanitarian crisis in that area. And you have a farcical situation that the government is immobilised, can't do anything without contacting Fianna Fáil. And I think actually the absurdity of it all was reached recently in the McCabe scandal highlighted by Katie when the Fianna Fáil spokesman on Justice, Jim O'Callaghan, rings the Minister for Justice, Francis Fitzgerald, who was attending a Fine Gael parliamentary party meeting, and says, look, there's a major programme on Primetime tonight revealing a lot of stuff about the McCabe scandal and you need to know about it. She says she had no memory of Tusla being mentioned in all of this. You can't run a country like that. You can't run a country with the opposition spokesman ringing the minister to say, listen, I have a leak about a media event.
But why not? Surely, aren't there countries that do this sort of thing all the time, that have a more consensual style of politics? The Nordic countries, which we're constantly told are sort of political ideals to be emulated. I mean, there's lots of countries that run minority governments all the time.
Yes, but
are we particularly unsuited to it?
We are utterly unsuited to it. I really have to smile when I hear good-natured, well-meaning, usually academics, some journalists, saying this is the new model of Irish politics, you know, this is the way to do it. And then you have the 56th Dáil Committee being set up to investigate something or to reach a consensus. No hope of a consensus. It's not within the Irish political psyche to have this kind of arrangement. You need an executive with a majority and hopefully a dynamic opposition. We have the worst of all worlds at the moment.
Katie, are you as harsh as Michael in your judgment of the new politics?
Well, I think the irony of all this actually is, you know, if anyone's been knocking around Leinster House for a couple of decades now, as some people here may or may not have been, periodically there will be a rush for a cry for political reform. And the political reform in the past that we were always told we need to strive towards was to give more power to the Dáil. And that the problem with Irish politics was always that the executive, the cabinet, ran the show and basically treated all the other elected members, elected by the good people of the country, with utter contempt. And they were lobby fodder and nothing was ever done that the cabinet did not approve of. So we have ended up and stumbled into a situation because of the political cards that fell after the last election, of giving us exactly that, a Dáil that has huge power now in terms of what can, and more likely and more often as happens, what can't be done. And we see where it has brought us. And really, you'd have to say, looking back at the last year, we are looking at a government that is largely paralysed in terms of new, you know, strong political initiatives, getting business done, basically, and very, very little legislation of merit or of note being produced and worked through the Dáil. And, you know, maybe that is just because it is still so new to Irish politics, to the political system here, that we do not know how to manage it. But I think we're in this situation where there's this kind of toxic balance of power between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. The Fine Gaelers deeply resent the fact that they must go cap in hand to Micheál Martin at all times before they have any hope of getting anything through. And Fianna Fáil are in that sort of precarious position that they have a huge amount of power, but they need to be careful how they wield it, because they see how it might play out if they are seen to overuse it in terms of the next election.
I mean, I think you're absolutely right that there has been a rebalancing of power between the executive and the legislature. But it would be hard, I think, to fairly assess that ordinary TDs across all parties, that the Dáil as a body has really stepped up to use that newfound power.
Yeah, but I think that's it. I think people really still don't know whether they're coming or going with this. It's such a novelty to see vote after vote being lost by government, and the government carries on. It's such a novelty to see private members' bills that would have absolutely languished in Never Never Land before suddenly getting on the agenda and being debated in the Dáil.
Legalisation of cannabis coming up shortly.
Really, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's a very novel situation.
For medicinal uses, I should add.
Indeed, yeah. But I'm saying we're in a very novel situation. And it certainly has potential, you'd have to say. But it is not working politically right now, I do not think.
Michael, Noel Whelan of this parish did an analysis a couple of weeks back where he looked at all the bills that had been passed by the current government. I think there was 18 of them, but three of which related to the budget, so they had to go through. Most of the rest were kind of procedural or technical bills. And he concluded that really only one substantive piece of legislation that was of this government's own doing had been passed by the Oireachtas in the last since this government came to power, that being Simon Coveney's housing bill before Christmas. That's a shocking summary of legislative stasis, really, isn't it?
Oh, it is, and it's damning of the so-called new politics. And you now have a situation where you have a plethora of private members' bills. Private members' motions coming from all directions, some of them accepted by the government, knowing, by the way, they'll never be implemented. I must say I disagree with this idea that you can't have a dynamic parliament if you have an executive with a majority. If you have an opposition that will not always play politics and that might even support some measures introduced by the...
But of course, if the government has a majority, yeah, it doesn't matter what the opposition think. Isn't this one of the things that we learned during...
But if you look historically at the most dynamic governments in the history of the state in Ireland, there was the setting up of the state and all that kind of thing, but as Ireland moved on a bit, people always... Some of the supporters of new politics say, but sure, Sean Lamass led a minority governments in the 60s. He didn't, actually. He Fianna Fáil was in a minority situation, but he had the support of a number of independents who helped Fianna Fáil to vote through measures. That was certainly the most dynamic government, if you looked at all that was achieved. What you now have a situation is that, we have moved on from the Civil War, etc., but Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael hate each other anyway. They're in competition for the same seats in some constituencies. So from that point of view, you have Fine Gael, happy to be in government. Fianna Fáil, watching and waiting, perhaps for the right moment to pull the plug, are hoping that Fine Gael and the independents involved in this government, that they will implode and that the government will collapse, and Fianna Fáil will say, we did our best, we introduced new politics, Fine Gael just couldn't wear it.
Katie, it seems to me that Fianna Fáil's participation in this arrangement, and particularly if you take example, like recent weeks in the stories that you've reported on so extensively for Primetime, when it was certainly within Fianna Fáil's power to bring down the government. Now, sure, you can say they can bring them down at any time. But here was the first confidence vote in this government. And Fianna Fáil, you know, I mean, it has led to the departure of the Taoiseach. It's a serious issue, or it will lead to the departure of the Taoiseach. And Fianna Fáil could justifiably have pulled down that government. They didn't. A judgment, I think, that was made at least in part about their own political interests.
Absolutely, because as in politics, as in all things in life, timing is everything. And this was not the right time. Internally in Fianna Fáil, they did not feel they were ready for an election now. They had the absolute perfect issue had come, landed on their laps. They could easily have justified running and saying, we cannot support this now. But internally, they were very deeply nervous that this would actually stumble into an election. There was a couple of days there where things were very precarious, and rather than pulling back from the edge, there was more issues coming up, piling on issue. But internally in Fianna Fáil, they were desperately seeking a way to do two things. Get the maximum damage to Fine Gael, while at the same time pulling back from the brink and not rolling into. So we had that extraordinary standoff between Jim O'Callaghan in Fianna Fáil and Francis Fitzgerald about what was or was not said in their conversation, which initially thought, well, this must be it. Why would Jim O'Callaghan be, you know, so publicly making a stand and basically suggesting that the Justice Minister was not telling the truth in relation to a very serious issue? But behind the scenes, we're told, there was desperate back channels going on, trying to agree a form of words that would get them over that hump and get them back all on the one page again. So they decided this wasn't the time. They're not ready. They don't have their candidates in place. They have a lot more work to do in terms of what they need to do in Dublin to shore up their vote there. And they also, I think, are hyper-conscious of not being seen to take to be political opportunists, basically, to take political advantage of something that was actually an issue that people felt very morally offended by generally. And to be seen to be using that particular issue as well might have played on their minds in terms of, you know, how will this be read politically?
Is there a chance, Michael, that in the future we will look back on this period of the minority government as, because, I mean, I've written in a piece for tomorrow's paper that, you know, this whole architecture of the new politics, the confidence and supply agreement, the minority government, let's not forget, they're not just a minority by a couple of votes. They're a minority by 20 votes in the Dáil. So this is Micheál Martin's construction more than any single individual. I think it is his construction that it will be looked back. I wonder, will it in time as a stage on Fianna Fáil's return to the centre of power, to the position of political hegemony that it held for so long?
That's Fianna Fáil's hope.
In other words, I suppose that's rather a long-winded way, sorry to cut across, it's rather a long-winded way of saying, you know, if you think about who is doing well out of the new politics, who is the new politics suiting, you'd probably say it's Fianna Fáil, wouldn't you?
I'm not certain about that. If you look at the succession of polls, the difference between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil in some cases is within the margin of error, 3%. Now, Fine Gael has been in power since, you know, 2011. And any party in power for a long time, people just get jaded with them. It's a fact of political life. Fianna Fáil should be doing better in the polls. The other thing about Fianna Fáil's recovery is it's all relative. I mean, here, last election, 44 seats, okay. 2011 was the meltdown, 20 seats. That included, by the way, the automatic return of Eoghan Comla. Let's go back to 2007 when they got into power again. 77 seats. I know it's 40 years ago now, but this year will mark the 40th anniversary of Jack Lynch sweeping the country with a 20-seat majority. Now, we know the days of overall majority are gone. The other point is, and if you talk to some of the Fianna Fáil people privately, who disagreed with Micheál Martin's strategy, but obviously went along for it, they're quite concerned that Fianna Fáil could get boxed into this arrangement. One of them said to me not too long ago, If we bring down this government, it has to be a serious issue. Mm. Our voters will turn on us. Probably an economic issue. That may not arise. The other thing Fianna Fáil is facing is a younger leader of Fine Gael coming up, perhaps, maybe, in Mr. Martin's own Cork South Central constituency, if it's Simon Coveney. Time will tell about that. Inevitably, people will look at Micheál Martin and say, oh, you know, Micheál's around a long time, as voters do. It's not as rosy in the garden politically for Fianna Fáil as some people in Fianna Fáil, a few, think. The other thing a Fianna Fáil TD was saying to me recently, actually, was that he's a bit concerned about some of the grassroots getting too gung-ho about all of this, that we have boxed Fine Gael into a corner. He's going to branch, he's going to common meetings now, and the awful depression that set in after 2011 has lifted, and they think they're on the way back. But it could all go wrong for them.
Katie, do you think that the forthcoming period for Fine Gael, a change of leader and that, could present an opportunity for them to rejuvenate the party, to from a position within government, which while it means that you have many more things in the course of your day to take up your time, it gives you resources, it gives you profile, it gives you the opportunity to be seen to do things.
Well, that's certainly, obviously, the hope within Fine Gael. And what's very interesting, actually, and I was just looking at this this week, was the two different kinds of Fine Gael you would end up with if one of either or of the two main contenders that are in this phony race that's now on, win the crown. Simon Coveney has put it on the record that he thinks Fine Gael needs to change its image. He's very concerned that since the last election, or what emerged in the last election, was that people maybe gave Fine Gael some credit for, you know, economic management of the economy, but that they have disconnected from huge swathes of disadvantaged communities. And he feels they need to remake those connections. He talks about using his housing policy as an example of the kind of policies Fine Gael should be pushing in order to, as he says, build not houses but build communities where people there's no stigma about having to, you know, be in a social house or having to depend on the state for a roof. Contrast that to what Leo Varadkar's position, who very handedly wrote it all out for us in a Sunday Independent article a couple of days after the McCabe scandal emerged, and in that he
coincidental that
yes but handy from our point of view now that we now know exactly what kind of Fine Gael Leo Varadkar would like to lead. And he talks about the Ireland that gets up early, the taxpayers, citizens who obey the law, who are ambitious for themselves and their communities. He talks about reducing income tax, saying welfare should be a second chance, not a way of life. He talks a lot about personal liberties. You'd be aware of that from a lot of His contributions already. He's very much into personal liberty and a libertarian. He said, we represent people who don't expect the government to do everything for them. And talks about as well the standing for the contributory principle, which is, you know, supporting the people who pay for everything and not the people who pay for nothing.
This is what John Bruton called the coping classes.
Indeed. I mean, that is a very clear vision. And I would suggest quite different from the vision that Simon Coveney has tentatively set out. But it will be very interesting to see over the next 8 or 9 weeks, however long this leadership campaign runs, which of those two visions for where Fine Gael should position itself will win the day. Because that
and
will have
course,
to play.
And of course, Michael, the choice of leader that Fine Gael makes will have a direct effect, perhaps, on the future of the current government. The people who were involved in the negotiations that throughout this whole the birth period, if we can call it that, or the gestation period, maybe, of the new politics baby, if that's not to overextend the metaphor. But people involved in those negotiations would say that Leo Varadkar was very obviously less enthusiastic about the minority coalition supported by Fianna Fáil on the outside than Simon Coveney was.
That's true. And even allowing for the fact that whoever's the next leader will need time for, for himself or herself to establish themselves as Taoiseach, I suspect that if it's either Coveney or Varadkar, they'll start to, after when they settle in, they'll start to play hardball with Fianna Fáil. And they'll challenge Fianna Fáil to bring them down on a particular issue that might be, reasonably popular with the public. And then, of course, the dilemma for Fianna Fáil is, do we pull them down or just do we go along with it? The other thing is, Micheál Martin is a very effective campaigner. He's very good in the media. He did very well in the last general election. But the reason he did so well was Enda Kenny was very poor. Gerry Adams was very poor. He hadn't that much competition on the debates. Next time, he'll have a new Fine Gael leader, outgoing Taoiseach. I think he'll have Mary Lou MacDonald of Sinn Féin as party leader. It'll be much tougher in the televised
debate. Suddenly he looks like the old man, does he?
Precisely. That's the other thing. And of course, the first thing they'll say is, Micheál, do you not recall your own years in government? You were in the Department of Health. You were part of a government that destroyed the economy. And he won't be able to taunt Gerry Adams about an alleged paramilitary past. He'll be facing, in Sinn Féin's situation, a young woman from South Dublin with no baggage, and he'll be facing somebody from Fine Gael, younger, and perhaps that bit, maybe, who might look that bit sharper. So a lot of people in Fianna Fáil, John McGuinness gave expression to this last weekend, that a lot of people within Fianna Fáil actually are unhappy that they're keeping Fine Gael in power privately. And of course, the other thing here, Pat, was the alternative that faced Fianna Fáil. There was a lot of old palaver last year about the 100th anniversary of the Rising and that we were in New Ireland and all that kind of thing. Fianna Fáil were offered a place in government. Most crucially of all, they were offered rotating Taoiseach and they turned it down.
The better to demonstrate perhaps that the old power-hungry Fianna Fáil was a thing of the past. No, was that?
No, I think maybe just standing back for a while.
The other thing, of course, about critical and all, though you may be about, Michael may be, Katie, about the construction of the new politics last year, of the institutions of the era of new politics, is that it's hard to see what the alternative was. Aside from either Micheál Martin breaks his promise, solemnly and repeatedly made to the electors of Ireland, that he would go into coalition with Fine Gael, or another election, neither of which appealed to certainly
yeah,
to Fianna Fáil.
I think from this remove, you can almost forget the kind of crazy situation that they all found themselves in at that time. The idea of going into coalition with Fine Gael was just never a runner. I mean, even if they decided in party HQ that this was the only way, there was no way they could get that through the party in general. That was just not a runner. And we were told that day one. And there was never any divergence from that view. And in many ways, Fine Gael knew very well that that was the case when they offered them the most generous offer you could possibly give to a coalition party, at rotating Taoiseach, an unthinkable thing, I suppose, in the past. But it was offered in the sure and certain knowledge that there was no way it could be ever accepted. So that was never going to happen. So really we were looking at cobbling together something along the lines of what we ended up with, or another election. And I think at going back to that time, and it was a very, heated, febrile time politically, that the idea of facing back out into the country in the fairly certain knowledge that not much would have changed, except maybe the establishment parties would have even gotten more of a hammering. So really what was cobbled together was probably the only politically acceptable outcome you could possibly have done. And you should have to say, you'd have to give credit to Enda Kenny for managing to pull it together, because certainly at many times during those negotiations it looked like a crazy plan that was never, that wouldn't come off. But they did actually pull all those people in. Now, of course, we know lots of promises made. Michael Noonan came in with the checkbook. There was very individual local interests sorted out. But they did get a government. Now, I suppose the history books will decide later on exactly what government they got.
I mean, that sort of deal making that put together this government, Michael, I should have noted at the start, but I'm of course in the presence of not of two of Kerry's greatest political correspondents here. But the people of Kerry, no more than the people of the rest of the country, will be aware through their recent experience with Jackie Healy-Rae that that this is how politics sometimes work. Deals are done, checkbooks are got out, and the construction of the next government probably won't be any different.
Absolutely.
So for all the point I suppose I'm trying to make is that for all we talk about the new politics, some things may have changed, but not everything.
No, and in fact, I think very little has changed. I'm amused when Fianna Fáil say we could not go back on something we had promised the Irish people. And it applies to all parties. All parties do U-turns after elections, individual TDs, ministers, and all that kind of thing. But in relation to the county that Katie and myself come from, on Radio Kerry this morning, the local Fine Gael TD, Brendan Grisham, was excoriating Micheál Martin, who yesterday morning at the steam station excoriated Brendan Griffin. So, you know, you'd think if new politics was working that they'd be civilised. Difficult and all as it is for politicians to do that.
The other thing I suppose one might say is that the next election, if there is to be an election later this year, judging by the polls, isn't going to produce a result that is terribly different. Now, Fianna Fáil, going on current polling strengths, might be a bit bigger than Fine Gael, but neither party, it looks like now, will be in a position to construct a coalition government without the support of the other.
Well, I was struck by that clip from Joan Burton in the run into the last election, where she basically said, "You have a clear choice here. You know, stick with the plan that's working," as she saw it, "or gamble on an uncertain future." Well, the people gambled on an uncertain future there, and it seems likely that we're going to get, as you say, quite a similar result. Maybe a switch in between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael in terms of who might be the bigger establishment party, if you put it like that. But nothing in the polls indicate that any of the other parties are going to make any breakthrough. And certainly the independents are going to be, we're going to have a lot of independents again in the next all. So we're going to end up in exactly the same situation. The same kind of deals will have to be done. So, you know, for all that Michael here says, you know, the new politics just doesn't work, we can't do it. But I think we are stuck. I mean, it's numbers. It's a numbers game, and you have to deal with the numbers you're dealt.
Could it work better, Michael? Could there be this sort of a minority arrangement supported from the outside that could work better? Or is it destined by virtue of its structure to be an ineffective government?
I think it's destined to be ineffective because of its structure. I don't think it could work better. I think it's unworkable. General elections produced numbers, results, as the stig. Okay, sometimes you might have what appears to be a swing to the left. But overall in this country, you get a numbers result. And it's up then to parties to come together and form a coalition and work effectively. And Fianna Fáil's problem is they did U-turns before, most notably in 1989, when they went into power with the Progressive Democrats, led by a man, Charlie Haughey, the then Fianna Fáil leader, had expelled from the party for conduct unbecoming. It's a great phrase in the Fianna Fáil core rule. The same Mr O'Malley had once said, Mr Haughey's unfit for public office. So when any of the parties, any of them, start getting on their high horse on issues, just to remind Fine Gael, that in the early 1990s, John Bruton said we couldn't possibly do a deal with the then Democratic left, who had emerged, of course, from the Workers' Party. 2 years later, he did. So when politicians flaunt their conscience excessively, you have to remind them of history.
Well, on that appropriately historic note, we'll end our discussion of new politics. But before I go, Katie, I want to turn briefly, if we can, to the story that you've been so involved in covering in recent weeks on Garda Morris McCabe. Why do you think this story exploded in the way that it did?
Well, I suppose, first of all, the story has been around in one shape or form for over 2 years now and has become really the most toxic story in terms of the political fallout of any story I can remember in recent years. It has claimed a confidential recipient, a justice minister, indirectly perhaps the Secretary General of the Department of Justice, indirectly perhaps the Garda Commissioner. And now, as you say, it has pushed the Taoiseach into a position where he's had to say he will make a decision about standing down. But I think when the detail, and as I say, so people have been aware of whistleblowers and issues around that for a number of years now. But I think the graphic detail of what was done in relation to Maurice McCabe, Sergeant Maurice McCabe, when that was laid bare and people saw that, I really believe from what people have said to me since we broadcast that, is that it touched a nerve with a lot of people in that they saw themselves in Maurice McCabe. You know, anyone who has ever been bullied, everyone who has ever felt powerless in the face of authority, it touched people in a way that really, carried an enormous amount of political power with it.
Well, it's certainly a story that has had a heavy political impact and may well continue to do so. My thanks to Katie Hannan and to Michael O'Regan. This is Pat Leahy, and thank you for listening to the Irish Times podcast.